Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm your host this week, Jesse Billington, and we're back to review the 21st round of the 2025 Formula One season, the Brazilian Grand Prix, or the Sao Paulo Grand Prix, to give it its full title. To do this, I'm joined by Leah Halsey. How are you? It's been a little while since we had you on.
I know. I think, was it Singapore, maybe?
Singapore preview would have been the last time.
Yeah, something like that. So yeah, a few races ago. Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me on. The Brazilian Grand Prix is probably my top three races, aside from Silverstone and Singapore, funnily enough. So really glad to be on for this race. And it was a bumper crop with the sprint and the race. So a lot to talk about.
Yeah, you're a fan of races beginning with the letter S. Silverstone, Sao Paulo, Singapore.
Spielberg. I love Austria as well.
Yeah. San Marino. Were you a fan of Imola?
I prefer Monza. So. Fair enough. But hey, it's okay. We got four.
Four ain't bad. Anyway, we'll jump right into this week's episode, and we'll kick off with a bit of news, actually, and the fact that Franco Colapinto has been renewed for 2026 with Alpine, and he'll race alongside Pierre Gasly at least for next season. Not entirely clear as to why. He scored no points across the 15 races so far and has binned it on occasion too. The only logical answer is that swathe of yellow on the back of the car is worth a lot to Enstone's coffers.
I loved Franco and Izzet Williams. I thought he came in after Sargeant and gave the team something fresh. I think he did really well. I think I've spoken about it before because we probably mentioned Franco a handful of times when I've been on, and Alpine in general. And just because of their dad, I was a big fan of Jack Doohan, even when he was racing in the Junior Series, I was a big fan of Jack. So I was really gutted when he lost that seat, and then to lose it to Franco and him not really making the impression maybe people thought he would have on the team. Obviously, we know that Alpine, with the ties to Clarkson's farm, that is a track to us, but ironic. But yeah, just not, I don't know. It makes me a little bit sad for Jack. I think he had that Suzuka crash, didn't he? Not the best nail in the coffin there, but yeah, I'm not sure why they've done it. Like you said, it's not clear why, apart from maybe the big cash. But and being Argentinian, I think there's a lot of Argentinian support in the sport. We saw it at in Brazil to some extent. I think last year, especially, Franco had a lot of support in Sao Paulo. So, yeah, a bit baffling. Maybe they're turning over a new leaf. But yeah, all I can think about is Jack at the moment, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it's got to be a bitter pill to swallow if you're Jack Doohan, where you're sort of looking at it going, he's done exactly what I did, but I got kicked out after five races and he's now had three times as long to prove nothing, really. It's an awkward one, and the only real explanation I can think of for it is the fact that we've got, I think, Argentina's National Bank on board. We've got like their local delivery service on board as sponsorship. It's a lot of money coming into a team that clearly needs a lot of development as well. It's at the back of the field. They stopped their development profile for this car a long way sort of before everyone else and admitted that it was going to be, I think the press conference coming after the back of Baku said that it was just going to be a long, hard slog for them for the rest of the season. And well, it's turned around a little bit this weekend. We'll get to them when we go for the team by team run through, but even then it's slim margins. Meanwhile, when it comes to drivers being signed, or rather in this instance, not signed, McLaren seems to be emptying its driver development program. And this follows the news that Hugo Ugochukwu has left. He'll still compete in Formula 3 next season with Campos, but no longer under McLaren's driver development program. Brando Bedard has gone the same way, but will stay with Rodin for 26 in Formula 3. And Martinez Stenshorn has also been cut, but will again contest Formula 2 with Rodin for 2026. Saying all that, Matteo Di Paolo joins the team for the program, having finished second in Freca this year and set to tackle Formula 3 next season.
Yeah, really not sure what McLaren are doing there, especially with I'm not sure. I think don't know if it's I can't remember if it's mutual. You'll have to remind me, Jesse. But with Alex as well leaving that program, maybe that was because of his move to F1. People might have thought, but not sure where he'll slot in. If that was the case, but yeah, really bizarre. But then you think it's like well they did have they stopped their Formula E team? They've stopped A team, haven't they?
They
Really.
stopped their Formula E team, I think.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I think they just
seen
Taylor
them.
Barnard went in and did really well. So it's weird, like they seem to be stopping a lot of things, but then you've got this with DiPaolo joining the program. It doesn't look like they're stopping it, but maybe they're getting a new band of talent in. But then with how good Ugochukwu was, especially I saw him race when he was in GB3, I want to say last year, 2024. So I saw him at Alton Park and in Silverstone when they were supporting the GT racing, and he was always a massive talent, very tall, may I say. He walked straight past me. He's towering over me. So that's a bizarre one. Obviously, still good. He's keeping a seat, just not backed by McLaren necessarily. So unless they're going to bring in a new band of talent, I'm not sure why they're emptying it out so fast.
Yeah, I think obviously Brando Bedard makes a bit of sense. He had a fairly sort of rough first season in Formula 3, not a lot to show for it. Martinez Stenshorn is an interesting one because he's got a lot of talent as he's sort of been moving through as a driver, seen a lot of promise with him. Ugochukwu didn't have the great first season in Formula 3, I think a lot of us expected, especially because he had really shone when he was in Freca as well. So he's clearly sort of familiar with that level of sort of single seater. But yeah, we'll see how Matteo Di Paolo does when he joins next season, and see what sort of progress he makes from there. But yeah, I think there's been some maybe uncomfortable belt tightening at McLaren, especially in the sort of, I haven't really checked in what the wake from the McLaren IndyCar saga has been, because of course there's been a lot of court cases surrounding that, and with promised seats being sort of touted between both Alex Palou and the other McLaren driver who was in Formula IndyCar as well, whose name escapes me at this moment in time. But the fact of the matter is that there's been a lot of change there as well. So might be all intertwined. It might just be speculation on my half, but we'll see how that pans out. With the news out of the way, we'll jump into our team by team analysis for the weekend, and we've got the details for how the Grand Prix went. But it is of course worth remembering that some of these notes will refer to the sprint race, which was quite an exciting affair for once. We'll kick off with championship leaders, winners, McLaren. Piastri qualified fourth for the Grand Prix and would finish fifth, while Norris qualified on pole and would take it home to the win. And I think there's a lot to say about McLaren this weekend, and despite an overall win, not all of it necessarily positive.
Yeah, I think they've got some positives to take. The main thing I can speak about with McLaren this season has been their pit stops, I want to say, is that under pressure, they haven't always delivered. And obviously then there was a I can't remember what race it was, but it was Lando was leading. I think they did a bad pit stop and then
I think, was it Monza?
I feel like it was around that time. Basically, and then Oscar's like, oh, this isn't like, is this part of racing? And they obviously had agreed beforehand that it wasn't, but then it was, so then they get their place back. It was a whole thing. So just their pit stops this season seem to have faded a little bit. I remember them being really strong. I can't remember if they got the fastest pit award last year or if it was the year before. They definitely did with like a
198.
198 or
Yeah, I think they did
something.
last year. Yeah.
So really impressive, and then this season it seems to kind of drop. But saying that, the positive they can take from this weekend is doing two identical, pretty much. If you want to talk about papaya rules, you can't get much, slicker than that.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Then both having a 2.2 second pit stop. Can't remember if it's their first or second, but either way. So under pressure, they delivered that, which is a really good positive to take. But yeah, obviously, if you separate the two, happy with Lando, and then Oscar, obviously, having that penalty for his that incident as the safety car restarted in the Grand Prix. So if you separate the two, there's a lot to digest with both of them. But as a team, yeah, they're not, considering they're the Constructors' champions for a second year running, it's not like, it wasn't a performance I don't think I would expect from a Constructors' champion team.
Yeah, I think, kicking off for me, my notes start with sort of Piastri in the sprint, and I think it was a bit of an easy mistake to make. It bit a few drivers and wiped out two others on that turn alone. So, let alone the ones we didn't see having a wobble. We only obviously saw the guys that ended up in the kitty litter, so there's probably more that came through there, sort of feeding in a big dab of opposite lock and stabbing at the brake pedal, trying to get the car straight again. So, it's, yeah, unfortunate that he was one of the ones that was just caught out by it. We've seen him struggle with sort of greasy conditions before. Think back to when the rain started to fall in Australia at the start of the season, that sort of transitional state of the track. It's just something that takes time to learn, and bear in mind this is only his third season in Formula One, whereas his teammate has got 9 under his belt already, I think, off the top of my head. Norris, though, really dominant in that sprint and just continuing his good form through qualifying and into the race, pretty much untouchable. Afterwards, he seemed a little bit upset to have not had the same margin over the field that he'd had in Mexico, though. But again, a bit more of a jumbled race, a two-stopper just keeps things close. He's very nearly a race win clear of Piastri at the moment as well. And if this pattern sticks around, I think he stands to wrap up the title ahead of Abu Dhabi. With Piastri, I'm at a bit of a loss, and he probably is too. The question is if Oscar can deal with the pressure of chasing. For most of the season, he has been in the lead. And I know there's a lot of doubt around McLaren's internal politics, how they're favouring one driver over another, or the fact that they say that they're not favouring one over the other. It's very hard to say without an accurate inside line when it's come to things like Red Bull and Alpine before. I've had sort of people that have been able to give me a slightly more sort of clear-cut idea as to what's going on inside the factory, at least. This time, I don't have that with McLaren. It's very hard to say. The collegiate mentality is a strange one for a Formula One team. And while there's a clear management structure as to who's in charge and who says what and what goes, the pressure on both drivers has taken its toll at points. And McLaren have managed that balance well, but they haven't had the drivers actively taking points from one another, sniping away from one another, crashing into one another, forcing strategies that have caused problems. But that balance has kept the door slightly ajar for Verstappen. And as a driver, you'd have to think you'd rather be at Red Bull when it comes to the management style. While it might be brutal, at least it's very clear who's number one, who's number two. It sucks if you're number two, don't get me wrong, but when you're number one driver, at least you know it and you know you've got that backing. Both drivers at McLaren at the moment are sort of going, is it me? Is it him? For Oscar, it seems like it was him for so long, but maybe he made it outwardly seem like it was, and he's burnt out from trying that hard, that now it's given Norris that chance to catch up. Norris went through a big lull. I don't know if we're seeing Oscar go through that too, but equally in the race, he did really well to unwind a penalty, and a bit of a silly one to boot as well. I don't think it should have been one. I agree with Alex Brundle's later statement that it was just a bit of a racing incident and possibly a bit on Antonelli. Yeah, Piastri wasn't quite alongside, but at the same time, Turn 1 at Brazil is known as being a spot where you dive to the inside. You can try and hang it around the outside, aim for the apex for Turn 2, like Charles Leclerc was doing, which is why he gave them so much room. But at the same time, it's a left, right, left as you go down to Turn 3 as well. You essentially get the inside again two corners later. It's why you really want to dive to the inside of Turn 1. And Oscar had it under control. I think it was just a case of Antonelli a little too exuberant with that turn in, didn't realize he was going to have quite as much of a bite because he had the headwind, and yeah, just shut the door a little too much. So yeah, unfortunate for Leclerc to get really tangled up in it, but brilliantly held by Antonelli. Kid knows how to power slide a car. He had that immediately on the lock stops, picked it up and pinned it again. So yeah, I don't know, it's kind of great for Antonelli, but also sucks for him because he sort of almost binned it, caused someone else to bin it, but saved it himself. So like, how did you walk away from that completely unscathed? Magic.
No, literally, yeah. Oh yeah, we'll go. We'll go. I'll give my little 2 pence about the two drivers. Obviously, yeah, great from Lando. He don't know if he got a grand slam because he didn't get the fastest lap of the race. In not that like gets you a point anymore, but he
No.
was fastest all weekend. Obviously, yeah, in practice he was fastest. Then got pole twice and then won both the races.
Didn't win every lap, though.
Very true. Very true.
Yeah, and the fastest lap, interestingly, went to Alex Albon, his
Yeah,
first
his
ever
first
fastest
one.
lap. Yeah.
I love it, but I'll talk about Williams. We know I love Williams. But yeah, really good from Lando. He is. Well, it just makes you think what, how maybe potentially he could have been, like how much, not easier, not necessarily, but when you think about his retirement at Zandvoort and then that silly crash in Canada, it just makes you think what championship could we have? He did say, I'm not sure if he said if it was today, but I heard it on the radio that he still thinks Max is a threat, which I think is really interesting considering there's obviously Oscar has that slight buffer between him and Max. Yeah, and he did sound a bit disappointed that it was only a 10 second lead in the end. I think that was noting to the fact that Max started in the pit lane and still was within 10 seconds of him. Which, yeah, is very scary for McLaren in general. Obviously, still quite a bit to iron out there. As for Piastri, yeah, that crash in the sprint, it caught out lesser. Wait, who did it catch out? Was it Borg,
Hulkenberg.
Lesser, and Colapinto?
It caught out Hulkenberg, I thought.
Probably. I don't remember.
Yeah,
A green car.
I definitely think it caught out Hulkenberg because I think it caught out Bortoletto got caught out further on around the circuit. He suffered no, because
Ah.
Bortoletto big shunt into turn one at a different point in time.
Yeah.
He overcorrected going into turn one and had that double impact 54G or something.
Oh, that was scary.
Yeah, it was Hulk that overrode the curbs and lost it there. But again, it's just a slippy section. It's downhill. You get the natural stream of water that runs through there anyway. So even if it's not raining and the rest of the track is starting to dry, that bottom bit is the last bit to dry out because you've got all
Yeah.
the runoff down the hill. It's just, yeah,
Yeah,
just a.
it does catch you out. So and obviously a bit Piastri. So I remember seeing him go off in the background and just I didn't really know how to react. I was just like, whoa, what's happened there? And obviously seeing the replay, yeah, that'll bite you. Obviously some other drivers we didn't see all the onboards like you said, but other drivers lucky not to be caught out in the same way. And then yeah, Piastri in the race, like you said, I think there was a debate of did Oscar lock up because he didn't have control of the car, or did Oscar lock up because he was trying to actively avoid slamming into the side of Antonelli? Whichever one, I don't know, obviously the stewards saw it one way and they gave him that penalty. Fans have seen it another way. I think even Charles agreed that it was a harsh penalty on Oscar. So yeah, that could have gone either way. And yeah, good recovery to P5 he was in the end, I think. So good to get some points out of that. But a little stat speaking about we'll go on I think to speak about how good Kimi has been this weekend in particular. But I think I heard Sky Sports say that Antonelli has actually outscored Piastri in the last 5 races. So yeah, I don't know if we are seeing this lull and like you say, he is starting to get burnt out. But this is the point where you need to have a bit of resilience, maybe. Don't get me wrong, I can't drive an F1 car. Couldn't do it for one race, let alone 24. So yeah. Yeah, he's 24 points down on Lando now, and like you say, with this form, I think Lando can finish second in every race now and still win it. Whether or not, you know, I don't think Las Vegas get ahead of myself. Sorry, Jesse, but I don't think Las Vegas will be very good for McLaren, Qatar, and Abu Dhabi. I think they'll win it. One of them will. But yeah, we'll have to see how he gets on the final 3 races, 4 if you include the sprint. But yeah, seems a bit turn of the tides there. Doesn't seem too happy with the setup of his car, generally, from what I've heard. But yeah, interesting times at McLaren.
Yeah, maybe some final developments have hit that car that have just taken it, sort of swung the balance, maybe back to Norris for these final few races. Again, we heard that early on in the season, McLaren brought in a new front end damper that just gave Norris back that steering feel that he really wanted. But then, of course, he just went through a run of bad luck as well. Bear in mind that Zandvoort was entirely reliability based, so that was never going to be his fault. But yeah, I've just totted up Piastri's scores over the past 5 races. Clive Races takes us back to Azerbaijan, where he's scored a total of 42 points. Whereas if I get Antonelli, we have, over the past 5 weekends, scored 56 points. So, yeah, there's a little bit of a gap there. Obviously doesn't help that Piastri missed out on points in Azerbaijan. But again, Antonelli hot on his heels in Singapore, just 2 points separating them there. And, yeah, this weekend, obviously, Antonelli outscoring him both in the sprint and in the Grand Prix, really helping throw that balance. And of course, just a strong weekend all in for Mercedes moves them up to P2 in the constructor standings. Russell qualified 6th, finished 4th, and Antonelli qualified 2nd, finished 2nd in the Grand Prix. And Antonelli just looked like a different animal in that sprint race. And it's nice that Mercedes didn't order him to let Russell through. Obviously, Russell mathematically was still in title contention, but it was a long way off. So I think Mercedes had sort of got into it and agreed that maybe it wasn't going to happen. So despite the conditions, they let the two drivers joust away. And yeah, it sort of, despite a fairly strong looking weekend for George as well, regular points contender, out of title contention with a maximum of 83 points to bag. He's 114 off of Norris, so it's no bueno for him. There's a strong finish to the GP. Yeah, again, they've seen them and Red Bull as well. Bear in mind, Serge passed Ferrari, who dropped to P4 in the constructors. Antonelli continued that brilliant Saturday form into the Sunday, drove like a demon. And if Mercedes can nail down the 2026 regs with a driver lineup that's growingly this competent, there'll be a real thorn in the side of the other big teams as they go on. So, all-round good performance from the Silver Arrows, with two drivers fighting at the top so well. They'll certainly stay ahead of Red Bull till the season's end.
Yeah, I don't know if I said it in this podcast or if I've just said it to people when I'm talking about it. I think I have. Is that I didn't understand at first the Antonelli coming into Formula One so soon. Oh, but I'm starting to see it. I hold my hands up. I'm sorry. I apologise to Mr. Antonelli because, yeah, this weekend was absolutely incredible. I do think in the sprint I was getting a bit scared because I did think with them changing tyres under the red flag that Antonelli would have caught up to Lando, whether it was a lap or two more. I think he would have done it. Obviously that would have been a nice moment for him, but it wasn't to be. And then yeah, really good race to, you know, start P2, finish P2. Good weekend for him. It's his best finishing position, I think, of the year. So really showing his strength in the final part of the season, which is really nice to see. And yeah, Mr. Russell, always Mr. Consistency, isn't he? Just doing a good job. He just always seems to be there. This year, he's just been there. And I like that from him. Very good. He was told to lift and coast towards the end of the race, which I don't think is what you want to hear when you have a roaring Red Bull imminent. So he did very well to defend that off. Oh no, he didn't, did he? In the end, did he? No, he couldn't.
No, he finished behind Verstappen, I think. Yeah, because Verstappen just inched it onto the podium.
Yeah, that's not what I know. Because then he was gaining on Antonelli, wasn't he? But yeah, I don't think being told to lift, he didn't sound very happy on the radio yesterday, bless him. But yeah, definitely being told to do a bit of Lyco is not what you want to hear when you have Max in your rearview mirror. And then yeah, just going back to Antonelli to finish on, he was also managing overheating by the sounds of his radio messages too. So he did very well to fend off Max. But yeah, really nice from Mercedes. Good to see them up into P2. I think that fight for P2 is gonna be a one to the end of the season. And it could really go either way, depending on how strong Mercedes finish. I do sort of hope it's them to have a bit of a come around from a few painful seasons for them. But we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, it's been a sort of tumultuous time, but Mercedes seem to be looking to sort of finish this era of the regulations on a bit of a high, especially if they can come home P2. It'll be a nice turnabout in form. And again, seeing how competitive the car was this weekend in changeable conditions, especially when they've struggled as a team to get the tyre turned on, with Pirelli making a step to the harder compounds for this weekend, they were able to sort of capitalise on it. They got the setup right with only one practice session to do so as well. It's important to remember, sprint weekend, one chance, do or die, to figure it out. Unless you're Red Bull and decide to completely rebuild Max's car between essentially qualifying and the race, and just sort of eat the pit lane start and go from there, which was a bold strategy, but it sort of paid off for them. But yeah, it's just a solid weekend for Mercedes with no no questions left in the air after as well. They've sort of completed the package and can move on. Looking forward to Las Vegas as well. If it shows that they've now got that sort of tire warm up and tire prep under control at a very cold race that's held at night on an unprepped sort of mostly street circuit, Mercedes could be, this could be George Russell's first, no, George Russell's first or second back-to-back race win if he, no, this would be, yeah, George's first back-to-back race win at the same circuit if he wins in Las Vegas in the weekend coming. So we'll see how that goes for him. Speaking of back-to-back winners, obviously a fairly obvious linking point to Max Verstappen, who's won back-to-back at pretty much every circuit he's ever been to at this point in his career, apart from Singapore, where he is still yet to win. So this weekend, Verstappen, though, qualified 16th and would take a pit lane start to go on to finish P3. Yuki Tsunoda would qualify 19th. So in contrast to where his teammate started, not worst, but would only finish 17th. If you wind the clock all the way back to the sprint race, abysmal from Tsunoda, really decent. And then flip side of it, decent from Max. And I absolutely love the snide comments from GP about setup during the red flag period. Obviously, they were still struggling with trying to get the car switched on, get it to activate the tires, the downforce. And there was the sort of married couple back and forth between Max and his engineer that sort of is the way they seem to communicate best. But yeah, qualifying would go on to be rough as hell for both drivers. First time out in Q1 for Max since Sochi 2021. And that was reliability issues, not driver issues, which wiped him out of the Russian Grand Prix qualifying session there. Yuki, meanwhile, struggled bus of a race from there. And Max, meanwhile, adding a new starting place to podium result to his tally. 17 different starting positions, all achieving at the least a podium. Yeah, forced that strategy to work, kept his title fight chances alive for another weekend. They're very slim. He's just within sight two whole race wins off the lead of Norris. But it's Max Verstappen. I still don't think we can rule him out this late in the season. It only takes Norris to have a few blips and stumbles in the next three races, and Verstappen could be right up there. Yeah, the flip side of that coin, though, is Tsunoda, who is almost certainly going to be gone at the end of this year. He hasn't adjusted to that Red Bull and has scored just 6.8% of the team's points this season with a best finish of six. And you look at the other teams that have finished higher than that. Ollie Bearman now regularly finishing sixth and above in a Haas. Toro Rosso has podiumed. Sauber has podiumed. Williams have podiumed and have seen strong results too. Alex Albon with 2 fifth places across the season as well. Verstappen drove very much like Prime Verstappen come the Grand Prix. The car, though miles off the pace and functioning qualifying, completely rebuilt. He overcame the challenge. Red Bull's penalty serving, though, sloppy. Another sign the team has grown lax since moving on from the days of Mr. Wheatley. Oh, and importantly, Antonelli was 44 days old the last time that both Red Bulls were knocked out in Q1. Japan 2006 with Christian Klien and Robert Doornbos, who were driving for the outfit at the time, which is worlds away. And you were also still an absolute child at that point in time. You were no older.
How old was I?
2006. I mean, you what, three?
Yeah, it depends when it was. If it's before June.
After June, Japan used to be sort of like a season closer still, so
Oh, damn it. I would have been three then. Yeah. Still, I don't remember that. Yeah,
you were three.
Max. Huh? I don't
You
remember
were
that.
three.
I wasn't conscious until I was about six, I don't think. So I don't have any memories. But no, yeah, Max, absolute demon. You've described Antonelli as a demon. I've used it for Max this weekend. Even from the pit lane and with an early puncture, making him do an early pit stop. He was P4 from last in like 23 laps, which is under a third of race distance, I think, if my maths is right. Probably. I'm not going to do the maths. Jesse.
How many, what lap did he do it on? How many laps did we have in the Grand Prix? He did it on lap
21.
23, 21, and we had what, over 70 laps? I'd say it's about a third, yeah.
Oh, actually, th 32.3% of the Grand Prix. So look at that.
Just
I
under.
know that maths. So yeah. For damage limitation, potentially with his early exit in Q1, I think he was going to take a 5 place penalty anyway. It sounded like before the weekend. Obviously, that wasn't helped by his early exit. But as far as damage limitation goes, with the circumstances, I don't think he could have got much better. And he was very close to getting P2, actually. I think if, like I said, with Antonelli getting Lando in the sprint, I think if it was a lap or two more Not sort sure if his softs would have been absolutely destroyed by then, considering he had been on them for, 16, 17 laps. By the end, he might have got Antonelli. So it's what would have been, but still to recover to P3, and like you say, another starting point to get into the podium for him. Yeah, it's just whether or not you like him or not, if you put that aside, you can't deny the talent in the car. That's what I told my dad yesterday. So, swings and roundabouts. In terms of Tsunoda, yeah, I don't really have much to say about him that you haven't touched upon. If we're looking at how Red Bull has been managed in years gone by, there is no way he would have been there potentially if they didn't have a little reshuffle. And then, yeah, just to add salt to injury, it was that 20-second penalty combined in the end because the team touched the car too soon, which always blows my mind a little bit. So yeah, not great from him. Like you said, I can't see him staying in that car after Abu Dhabi, with Honda moving on. Are they moving on from Red Bull?
They're moving over to Aston Martin. So it's Ford moving in 2026, who will be helping with the electrical side of the drivetrain.
Yeah, so I can't see him because obviously he has those ties with that. So I can't see him staying there. Whether or not he deserves to, but then I don't know who they're going to take up because part of me hopes they don't steal Hadjar, even though he's been excellent. I don't want the Rebel curse to affect Hadjar just yet. So yeah, I've put what the F because for Tsunoda because I get it, hard car to drive if you're not Max Verstappen, but equally, P17, and then he's only P17 because three of the cars were tied, if I'm not mistaken. So
Yeah.
take that as you will.
Yeah. A P17 is sort of last of the runners, I believe. Again, I'll pull up my noted race report down here and we can check. Yeah, we had obviously the two Ferraris DNFing and Bortoleto DNFing. So yeah, three runners out takes you down to 17th being the lowest achievable place for Tsunoda, unfortunately, and makes it now. Yeah, the last time he scored points was COTA, where he finished seventh, which was, yeah, not a bad result, but again, he was close to being overtaken by Hülkenberg at that, if I remember correctly. So, yeah, not sort of again, a tale of two kitties for Red Bull, really. And I'll be curious as to what they do going into next season. Maybe they will just cling on to Yuki and finally figure out that maybe if you give a driver more than sort of a microsecond in a car, they might need a bit of time to adjust, especially knowing that the car's tricky. And again, maybe next year's car will be built differently. Yuki can only hope. Meanwhile, it's great news for Ferrari if you follow their World Endurance Championship series, in which case they're constructors' champions. And I think the car driven by Antonio Giovinazzi is also champion, which perfectly coincides with the arrival of his new baby daughter. So many congratulations to him. If you're a Ferrari Formula One fan, slightly less good weekend. Hamilton would qualify 13th and then go on to DNF. Meanwhile, Leclerc would qualify third, but would also go on to DNF. I can't remember how they got on in the sprint, but I don't think it was particularly strongly well. Oh, no, it was all right. Leclerc finished fifth and Hamilton finished seventh, but not great considering.
Yeah, I think it just summarizes their season really, doesn't it? Just not seeming to have that luck. All right in the sprint, I would say not too shabby. Obviously being outscored by a McLaren with the Oscar DNFing in that race, and then the Mercedes and Max, and then a rogue Fernando Alonso in P6. But if you talk about Charles Leclerc, he beat him. So I don't think their result in the sprint was too bad considering the challenges they might have had the season. As for that race, God bless. Leclerc was just a passenger, really, wasn't he? Like you said earlier on, he had tried that move around the outside a handful of times, so that's what he was clearly going for. So just unlucky to have that, really. And if my sources are right, aka Sky Sports, who I keep noting in this podcast episode, I think this is his second DNF in seven races, which is very unfortunate for the Monégasque. But congratulations to him too, because he got engaged in the well, he announced his engagement in the week, so might not have had the luck in the race, but he's lucky to have a fiance. So God bless. And Hamilton, he lost a lot of downforce, obviously, with that contact with Sainz, and then having to pit and things, get his front wing change, which he was lucky to be able to do under safety car conditions, I believe. But yeah, ultimately had to retire on lap 39 after having a penalty and serving that after running into like a Colapinto. And if my sources are correct, aka Sky Sports, again, I think this is the first time he's retired at Interlagos since 2012. So yeah, like I said, the bad luck just summarizes Ferrari's season. And actually, my favourite stat of the weekend is that two-thirds of the retirees are Brazilian or have Brazilian links, obviously with Bortoleto being the resident Brazilian, and Hamilton having that citizenship, the honorary citizenship from the Brazilians, I guess. So yeah, I think it just summarizes Ferrari's season so far, just not having that luck, and yeah, just unfortunate passengers really, apart from obviously Hamilton running the back of Colapinto, but not where they want to be wrapping up this set of regulations for sure.
No, not a great end to sort of, or start of the end of their season, so to speak. It's, yeah, just unfortunate, certainly. And the sprint was a bit nondescript for them, and struggling to shake off Alonso as well, who sort of had a sudden turn of speed for the sprint, but just sort of faded away come the Grand Prix. It was not a perfect outing for the Scuderia, and yeah, to fall now down to fourth place in the very close fight for second in the Constructors' Championship. There's a lot of money on the table there. And already John Elkann, the CEO of Ferrari, has come out with some, how do I say, unsavory things, but certainly barbed comments when it comes to the performance of his Formula One drivers and the fact that they seem to be very much out for themselves and not thinking about Ferrari and the overall outfit. And like, yeah, but I don't think Ferrari's thinking about Ferrari at the moment either, given the way that they're sort of going on. So I think there's a lot to be unpacked here, and I don't think that John throwing the toys out of his pram because his drivers aren't necessarily getting everything out of their cars is the way to go about it. Also, John, I think you've got bigger things to worry about because aren't you supposed to be serving community service at the moment after being found for tax fraud in Italy? Tax fraud in Italy, of all places, the place to do tax fraud, and you got done for it. Christ alive. Anyway, moving on to another tricky one to pick apart. Williams. Albon qualified 12th, would finish 11th, while Sainz would qualify 15th and finish 13th. We've got a small note from Timo, who's absent this evening on our recording because it's his birthday and he's out celebrating. He's simply written, fantastic golf livery, and that's about it. And for me, it was a bit flat from Williams in the sprint. Albon wasn't going to get points, but ended up losing places when Bortoleto's front wing got stuck under his car. Points weren't really on board for them this weekend at all, I don't think. It wasn't a circuit that favoured the car. And while they've been able to develop and bring a more well-rounded car to this season, it's still a car that's got marked strong and weak points. And this was very much the latter. Clean and tidy, mind, and not too expensive for them. Hopefully, they'll have a better shot at Las Vegas. Big long straights akin to Baku should give them a fairer chance at points, though they are still a solid 29 points clear of Aston Martin behind, too. And like we mentioned earlier, this marks Alex Albon's first fastest lap.
Yeah, nice little touch from Alex to get that award. Obviously, like I said earlier, doesn't contribute to any points tallying now. But a nice moment for him to get that in the last stage of the race. Yeah, it's not a great weekend to be a Williams fan. Yeah, like I don't know if it was ever going to be possible, like you said, to get points before I think a lot of pit stops. I saw Alex was P5 at one point, which I loved, and then obviously he went down to P11, but they both gained places from qualifying. Whether or not, you know, they did have two people DNF in front of them who started ahead of them. Oh no, wait, Hamilton didn't, did he?
Hamilton,
It's very close.
very close, but no, I was trying to think who he would have had starts ahead of him that dropped out. He would
Albon was ahead, but Sainz wasn't.
yeah.
So, yeah. They're doing very well in the constructors. I hope they keep on that fifth because I know it would mean a lot to the boys back at Grove. But yeah, just there. I don't think they had anything special. Don't think they could bring anything special. Wasn't ever going to be like a Baku special like we've had with Science. So depressing if you thought they were going to be in the points and are like an avid Williams supporter. But I think with what they had this weekend, that wasn't too bad a result, really. So, look, obviously looking forward to Las Vegas. Like you said, I think they'll have a much better shot there. Hopefully, a double points finish for them, and obviously maintaining that lead ahead of Aston Martin would be nice. But yeah, not the weekend they want for them, but nice for Alex to take his first fastest lap award.
Sort of a mixed bag, but ultimately, I think for Williams getting to this point in the season as well, not too expensive when it comes to parts and sort of usage of things. We didn't have cars in walls, we didn't weren't losing front wings and sort of breaking bits and pieces off. So, yeah, grand scheme of things, they can make it to the end of the season without having to worry about sort of casting up fresh front wishbones and all sorts. Now, I can't remember if these guys have moved around. I don't think they have. I think it's a static position for Racing Bulls. Who are actually the ones in sixth place behind? Let me check. I can't remember if they've moved around because again, the fights in the constructors behind have been all over the place. So let's check the big spreadsheets. Bum, bum, bum,
Racing
bum.
Bulls are sixth.
Yeah, they are sixth. I'm trying to remember if they've just overtaken Aston Martin.
Yeah, they're 10 points ahead.
Yes,
So
they, yeah.
probably this weekend.
No, they overtook Aston Martin quite some time ago, actually. They did it way back in Azerbaijan.
Oh wow, ages ago.
Yeah, so a good thing I've moved them up because Lawson finished seventh, having qualified seventh, and Hajar would qualify fifth and go on to finish eighth. So yeah, I think both drivers faster than Tsunoda in the sprint. Careless contact though from Lawson into Behrmann in that first sort of mini race. Lawson's economy run though in the Grand Prix was mega and kept him fighting away for points, even if he was under a bit of pressure towards the end just to keep the car on track. But yeah, it was a good move from the team to split up the strategies and make both strategies work as well. Some good thinking from the pit wall there. So yeah, impressive and great that both drivers were able to make all of it work, which was quite interesting. Unfortunate for Hadjar to tumble back, but I think he may have sort of overqualified the car's long-term race pace there. So sort of slipped back again, doing the two-stop strategy might not have been the overall quickest way round. But again, for a tricky track conditions, to keep him on track, pointing the right way, maybe the constant fresh tyres was the best option.
Yeah, I mean both in the points. So I think that's a massive positive of Racing Bulls to have, especially in this latter part of the season. They are still quite a fair way off of Williams. So, as we said, with the 29-point gap, don't know if that'd be possible maybe to catch them, especially with their up and down roller coaster ish of a season they've had. But no, a great drive for both of them. Obviously, Lawson was heading that massive DRS train we had. I think that went all the way back down to Fernando Alonso in 14th, if I'm not mistaken. So then the Grand Prix, they all like came over in uniform, which is quite aesthetic. But yeah, I have to say, just for because I don't know if I said it before, maybe not so much anymore after he tried to hit my favourite person ever, Ollie Bearman, in the race. They had that thing, had that squabble. But I did want Liam to have a bit more time in that Red Bull seat. So not that I enjoy, I don't think enjoy is the right word, but I do think it's ironic that they both outscored Tsunoda and by quite some margin. That's 10 places ahead for Lawson, obviously 9 for Hadjar, outscoring someone who's meant to be in a superior car. So love that irony. Yeah, good qualifying from both of them. Also nice to have Hadjar up there. We know his talent in a car. With that po did he get a podium? Or was that a fever dream?
What, Hajar? Yay, podium.
Well, he is just impressing me all the time. Obviously, Antonelli's an impressive rookie, but Hadjar on a racing ball. Come on now. Absolutely brilliant. Obviously, just yeah, unlucky drop back. Like you said, Jesse, maybe not a bit more than he could chew. That's probably not the right word, but obviously qualifying just ahead of where we'd maybe expect him to see him. With those early knockouts from Hamilton and from Verstappen in qualifying. Not that obviously it mattered to Hamilton in the end, but yeah, nice race for both of them. Obviously, yeah, both at the head of that DRS train, so got maximum points where they could have been, I think, this weekend.
Yeah, they capitalized on ultimately a weekend where there was a bit of a jumble ahead of them and cars that were out of position that should have been ahead of them but now behind them. So sort of made it work for them. Behind them, Aston Martin, Alonso qualified 11th, would finish 14th in the Grand Prix, while Stroll would qualify 14th and finish 16th. And it was a decent sprint quali from both. Alonso capitalizing on things nicely. And then it sort of just all unwound as the weekend went past. And then come the Grand Prix. Stroll's clumsy defence on Bortoleto was lucky to not earn him a penalty in my mind. And Alonso's pace in that final stint, having pitted, barely enough to get past Ocon in the Haas. It took him a long old while to close in and get past him. So it's, or I don't think he even did get past him. Checks notes. No, he didn't. So yeah, just a lot left on the plate for Aston Martin this weekend.
Yeah, I think the highlight there weekend would have been Alonso's P6 in the sprint race. So if he could have continued that same momentum into the race, that would have been good for the Silverstone-based team. But yeah, it just wasn't to be. Really odd, but yeah, like you said, it just all kind of unfolded from the sprint race. Obviously, Stroll, like you say, very lucky not to get any kind of reprimand for that contact. So, yeah, just there's not a lot to say about them apart from it's just, yeah, odd, especially against Ocon. I think that's really interesting. We'll go on to speak about Haas, I think next, but yeah, the struggling, one day you're battling against being sandwiched between two Ferraris, and the next you're struggling to get past a Haas. It's just a bit like, so where's the in between? Where's the bridge for that? How can it be so different? Obviously Alonso was one of those ones caught up at the back of that DRS train, so I'm not sure what maybe he would have been able to do in that traffic. We know how hard that has been on some cars this season, especially having that dirty air coming from many a car, especially in such close proximity to them. And then Stroll, yeah, only P16 ahead of Tsunoda. So when we compare how we spoke about Tsunoda's race, it kind of tells you all you need to know about Stroll, really.
Yeah, and Alonso was toward the end chasing, or supposed to be chasing down Albon, and then sort of so, as Albon and Sainz swapped positions, it would have been Sainz towards the end, but again, just sort of seemed to make no impact on that race, which is odd considering how he had qualified relatively well. And at one point, I think he was running around P7. He had had a fairly sort of good opening sort of session to the race, and just tumbled away through the order and just struggled to start making his way back through again. So clearly, the Aston Martin hating being in the dirty air. Haas, meanwhile, qualified 17th was Esteban Ocon and would go on to finish 12th, making a nice recovery drive of things. And Behrmann would qualify 8th and make his way up nicely through the field to qualify 6th. Both getting very feisty in the sprint, loving the direction Haas is moving and how well Behrmann has found his form. Ollie's qualifying genuinely had me believing we were on for another Haas pole at moments. It was stunning. Out there on track, banging in the times, like, please let it rain now. Please let it rain now. Insane performance and did well to work away quietly in the Grand Prix too. Just staying with the field, capitalizing on sort of the gaps when they appeared, keeping it clean. And yeah, peak position of 4th in the Grand Prix, 6th place overall, makes it 4 points finishes in a Grand Prix in a row, a first for any Haas driver. He will be in that Ferrari in 2027 for sure.
Yeah, that's what I've said. I think there are whispers of it happening now. But he's definitely shooting for that Ferrari seat. I mean, undeniable. I put in the notes, not to be completely biased, but I'm completely biased because Ollie Bearman, he's just someone I followed since the lower Formula, so naturally just have that bit more not care. What's the word?
Sort of love for
Yeah, I wouldn't say love though. Just like
appreciation.
that's the word. Good. Thanks, Jesse. Yeah, a bit more appreciation for him just because I've seen him go through Formula 3 and then into 2 and then now into 1. Obviously, you can imagine how I was when he got that seat at Ferrari for Saudi Arabia last year. But yeah, he did really well. And like you say, it was almost flashbacks to 2022 with K-Mag, especially in Q1 and Q2, banging in the faster times in those two. And then just unraveled a little bit for him in the final. In the final part of qualifying, obviously we saw it with Lando's run earlier on that he just didn't get it set up correctly, and that's the nature of the beast, isn't it, really? That one run you can be first, the next one you can be P8. But yeah, really well, like you said, just chipping away, just there, just keeping an eye on it. And he actually finished 23 seconds ahead of Lawson in P's, or like around 23 seconds ahead of Lawson, who was P7 behind him. So keep a nice eye out of that way, obviously keeping out of the way of the battles in front just there, but getting a lovely bag of points again as well. Yeah, nice overtakes as well. I noted in the sprint and the feature, I think he did a really nice move into turn one a handful of times. That obviously triggered me to say that. And then yeah, like I say, Ocon, great to make up those places up to P12. obviously a victim of that DRS train, so not sure what else he may have been able to do. But like you say, getting a bit not aggressive, because I don't know if you're allowed to say that anymore, but getting a bit, yeah, feisty is the word you use, which I'll just completely copy in the sprint, which is nice. It's nice to see a bit of passion. That's what I call it in netball. If I'm getting a bit elbow with someone, I call it I'm just being passionate. So we'll say that. But yeah, good run of form for them for the end of the season. Hopefully it continues. And yeah, really happy with the direction they're going in. But like you say, I think, well, we'll talk about our winners and spinners at the end. But I think from my debrief, you can probably tell who my vote's going to go towards. But hey, look, you can still guess if you want. But
Yeah,
no.
guesses are still open. We'll move from Haas to Sauber. Hülkenberg qualified 10th and would finish 9th. Bortoleto would qualify 20th and DNF from the race. Timo's again left us with a short note for this one, which is contender for crash of the year from Bortoleto. How he didn't collect Albon, I don't know, which was, of course, that very impressive crash in the sprint race. And yeah, I think for the sprint race, especially. Yeah, we live and we learn. We got to sort of move on from that one. I think they both shrugged it off fairly well, actually. And you've got to feel for Gabby off the back of that weekend, especially when Nico was able to extract points from the car in the Grand Prix. However, major kudos to Sauber for building that car up following that mega incident and just getting it fired up as Q1 finished. Got to be a bit galling, but at the same time, proving that in what, 3 and a bit hours, 4 hours, they can build an entire Formula One car. Nice going. Nico, though, showing his experience with the strange conditions across the weekend, a bit cold, a bit greasy, the track rubbering in, sort of getting used to that sort of progress feeling and getting something out of it in what is still known to be a bit of an awkward car, let's say.
Yeah, I've put woof, which is my word of the week, with that big shunt from Borsler. So that was scary, obviously gaining airtime. And yeah, I'm gonna agree, how he didn't collect anyone else in the process was very impressive. But yeah, I was a bit gutted for him that he couldn't see out his home Grand Prix. But hopefully he'll have more home races in the future. And yeah, like you say, it must be a bit of a tough pill to swallow, considering, like you said, Hulk was able to get some points out of it. I've said that Hulk had a nice move, must have impressed me around the outside of Albon. I think the outside move at turn one is really nice anyway, so that's probably why I noted it down. And I think he was also, unless he did a late pit stop that I missed in the midst of getting ready to leave my house, he might have also been on the one-stop strategy, or he was set to be on it. I'm not sure if he had a late pit stop. I can't check the pits on the app anymore, which I don't appreciate. But if he did, fair play to him. Obviously worked out nicely, same as Lawson. But yeah, like you said, I think the main takeaway is that Gabby was all right from his crash, because it could have very easily gone either way. I've seen the head-on shot that Sky Sports posted, and it's just like the fragments of the car coming out of it, and then you could just see the nose of the wing on it, just like a little nub still on there, which just shows how much safety is developed in Formula One. And it just reminds you how incredible these machines are in terms of how the technology has developed to let someone walk away from that pretty much scot-free. And then yeah, the other takeaway is that you can rebuild a car in, like you say, 3 and a bit hours. So really impressive from the team, considering they're not necessarily one of the, like, they don't have a
Bigger
lot of money
teams,
compared to, yeah, the bigger teams. That's a nice way to put it. So yeah, really impressive from them, and obviously hoping they can I'm hoping Gabby in particular can recover something in Las Vegas.
yeah, because 57G, it also the shots of it, the way that everything is flying off, it looks like it should have gone over, sort of that spin of just it throwing bits and pieces apart from itself. But in reality, it was just sort of, I think he would have gotten very lucky. If essentially he moves offline, I think he's trying to move. I can't remember who he's trying to make an overtake on. I think it is Albon in that moment that he sort of ducks out from the slipstream, just gets onto a bit of a wet part of the track in the sprint race, and that just sort of spits the car left into the edge of the pit wall. Had he been able to gather it up, had he not been traveling so fast, he would have overshot the pit wall and just sort of careened off into the runoff area of turn one. And he would have got away with it. It was just sort of terrible luck that he nosed into the pit wall. And that's what bounced him into that second impact at the top side of the circuit. But yeah, it was, yeah, I think proof that the Sauber is built properly and They've got a fairly decent team there if they're able to put something back together in that space of time. Meanwhile, Alpine. Gasly would qualify 9th, finish 10th, and Colapinto would qualify 18th and finish 15th. But considering that at least two cars ahead of him, they're both Ferraris, are coming, I think, where did Bortoleto qualify behind him? So, yeah, or not at all, rather. So, considering that two cars finished. The two cars that qualified ahead of Colapinto did not finish, to only make up one place is a bit of a bum move, but at least it didn't bin it, I suppose.
Yeah. Hey, look, there's always a silver lining, Jesse, and you've just found it that he didn't have the same luck as last year, having that crash in Brazil. And he's had a bit of redemption, if you call redemption a one place gain. But yeah. Just obviously last year was the last year or was it the year before? Last year.
Last year that
They had that double
Colapinto,
podium, didn't they? With Max winning it. Yeah, that was ridiculous.
yes.
Oh, it's just such a shame. Good. I like you say, silver lining took a point. So that's okay. I don't know if you just said, but they can still get P9. We believe, guys, we believe. Will they do it? I am going to say no. So that's my hot take for the day. That's not really a hot take. But yeah, just like you say, for Colapinto especially, to only make up one place is not great. Obviously, the two finishing behind him, Stroll and Tsunoda. So, if you look at it, he did outplace a Red Bull. But hey, let's not talk about why potentially. But yeah, just not maybe the not the weekend for Alpine, not the season for Alpine. Maybe they'll do better in the new regulations. We don't know. We don't know. But
Maybe they will. I mean, I don't think
maybe they'll
overall
shock us. We never know.
it might be Renault 2005 all over again. They come back and they're absolutely punching. But I think as easy as it is to dunk on them for this weekend, bear in mind what Gasly managed to get from the car this weekend. The sprint marked their first point since Spa, and then capitalizing on that momentum, bagging another point. Great. They are, however, 40 points off of Sauber, while they could mathematically at least catch P9, the constructors. Feels very unlikely. So, yeah.
Yeah.
We're at a point where I think we can confirm that Alpine received the wooden spoon this season.
Wow.
Yeah. Speaking of wooden spoons, we'll move on to our winners and our spinners. Timo in absentia has chucked in some winners and spinners for us. His winner this weekend was Max Verstappen. I think fairly obvious. He had a fairly good recovery drive from the pit lane to P3, so not bad. Leah, your winner, I feel, is another fairly route one option for you, especially.
Well, guys, if you couldn't guess from the way I was speaking about him, swooning, some might say. I wouldn't. I just say appreciating, as Jesse gave me the right adjective earlier. But mine's gotta be, I could have gone boring and gone for Max, because that would have been obvious. And I could have gone, I'm not gonna say it, because Jesse's done them. So I'm also not gonna reveal that. Spoiler alert, Ollie Bearman for me. It's gotta be. I'm just really impressed. I think just he's my winner for the last few races. He's, like we say, he's got to be a shoo-in for that Ferrari seat. And when that day comes, I'm gonna get all the merchandise. I'm gonna be in my Ferrari era again. It's gonna be great. I just think he's done really well. And like you say, to P6, I think the best he could have done this weekend, capitalised when he wanted to. Did some nice moves when he's in there. If we just ignore that Lawson thing that happened, who? What Lawson thing? I didn't see it. If we just ignore that, great from him. And then yeah, that qualifying was something else. I think yeah, a really good show from him this weekend and for the last few weekends, and really cementing himself as maybe, you know, not rookie of the year, because we've got some rookie in a Merc that's obviously getting podiums and things, but. When you think about his season and transformation, obviously we saw a bit of that instinct in China when he was saying "Changs for everyone." But I feel like we're getting more and more of that as the season's gone on. And yeah, hoping it has a really strong end to the season. So my winner, honorable mention to Kimi Antonelli. I would like to say that because I was very impressed with him. It seems like I think he visited. Obviously, his hero is Senna. I think he visited Senna's grave, and it just seems like he was reincarnated this weekend. In Kimi Antonelli, but yeah, my winner, Ollie Bearman.
think the Kimi Antonelli thing isn't necessarily the fact that he visited Senna's grave, but there is this ongoing theory. I don't know if you've seen it on F1 socials or sort of certainly F1 Twitter at least, that I think it's aluminium dioxide is a food additive that's banned in some countries and allowed in others. And it seems to be the countries where it is allowed are the countries where Kimi Antonelli absolutely comes alive. It's sort of like countries where you're allowed to feed this child the driver E numbers, you suddenly get this great performance from him. And that seems to be the pattern that we've got with Antonelli, at least, is countries where this sort of suspicious food additive flavoring agent can be found legally. Antonelli just sort of sparks into life. And funnily enough, it's legal in Brazil. So yeah, the pattern checks out. It's a growing trend. But yeah, I think my winner has to be Lando Norris, really, going back to back on races with this incredible level of consistency and control. I've got to commend the guy for turning his season round, for sort of clearing his head, finding his feet, and really knuckling down. And it's been a really impressive recovery drive from him. The fact that he's sort of gone from DNFing in Zandvoort to then sort of turning his form around, really making things count and pressing home in an interesting advantage. It's I'm not his biggest fan, but I can appreciate the talent and the effort that it's taken to get this sort of turnaround in his seasons. I think that's a fair credit. Spinners, Timo said the stewards for Piastri's penalty cough racing incident cough, which I think is fair. I don't think it should have been a penalty. Leah, you've got a correlated spinner, let's say.
Yeah, looking at, I don't know what I was on last night because I don't know if these would be my spinners now, but I'm gonna run with it just because I'm not very good at thinking on the spot. I'm
Back
not gonna
yourself.
change it. Spinner, one of them I put Gabby just because literally, and yeah, I'm just maybe not spinners in the same sense as maybe we're talking about like a wooden spoon spinner, as in like. Like a blur spinner, you know what I mean? More like a, oh, he's a spinner, bless him. Just because I feel a bit sorry for him. And obviously, just not how you want to mark your first home race. So, yeah, that was just more like a, he was a spinner, bless him. But I do think I'm going to be bold. And look, guys, I'm a big McLaren fan, but I'm gonna stick with Oscar, actually. Obviously, he was a bit, maybe he was unlucky in both situations, actually. But a spinner nonetheless, obviously, catching that bit of curb in the sprint leading to him crashing out in the sprint race, and then obviously that locking up and getting that penalty. Although he did recover back to P5, yeah. I don't know. Maybe he was my spinner. Maybe I'll have a little think about a different one. But for now I'll stick with my guns and just say, I think just spinning for the last few races, a bit like Ollie is my winner for the last few. It just seems like it's slipping away from Oscar ever so slightly. I wouldn't say he's out of contention, obviously, because we know how talented that Australian is. But yeah, they're my two for this weekend, I think. While I can't think of another one.
You've got as long as it takes for me to explain Yuki
Okay.
Tsunoda. Did you wish to change your mind? Because word from Mekis is the cars are now identical, and Max made it from the pit lane to the podium, while Yuki only made up two places and earned a penalty, while the team doubled down on that penalty. And also, technically, Yuki's two places he made up were simply the Ferraris retiring. So, yeah, not a strong weekend from Yuki, especially when there is the risk of that seat sort of hanging over him and potentially being out of a drive for next season. I don't know if he's contemplating looking at IndyCar, heading off to Super Formula, Super GT, anything, because I don't think Formula One has a space for him next season, or he'll stick around as a test and reserve driver at Red Bull if they are feeling kindly towards him and want someone who sort of at least understands the systems and the cars and the people at the factory. But yeah, it's I don't think we're seeing him in a race seat next season.
Yeah, that's weird you said that. I never really thought about him not having a seat full stop, just because I haven't considered it. I won't lie. But yeah, now that you say it just feels weird to think of a because spoiler alert, I'm not a lifelong fan of Formula One. I had it on TV when I was a kid, but I wasn't really interested. But I've only ever known Formula One to have Yuki in it. So to think of him not being in it is a bit weird for me, maybe in particular, just because of how long I've seen his name on the screen. I think if I had a little scan through I think if I was to pick a different person, I think I would have gone with Sonoda, a bit like you, especially like you say, with those cards being the same. But maybe I'll stick to my two as well. I'll just have three. It's fine. I'll just be greedy. But hey.
Pick three options and stick with your kids. Meanwhile, when it comes to our predictions review, only 1 point appointed this weekend, and it's my prediction of third place for Verstappen. Everyone else pointless, which was quite fun. Meanwhile, though, when it comes to the fantasy Formula One review for Brazil, Yuki the rookie takes the win this weekend. At least he's winning at something. 341 points. LeVictory in second place on 320, and my Jaffa Cake Racing in third on 319. A surprisingly good weekend for them. Mixing Pot is then in sixth, 283 points. George's Pub Quiz team in seventh. Annie Mae's Cat Dads in eighth. And then finally, we get to first of Timo's teams actually to appear on the list in 30th on 185 points. Champagne Macarons there. Overall, LeVictory holds the lead, 3,788 points. George's Big Reach moves up to second, bumping Ticolas down to third, 3,618 points, placed 3,607. Catherine's Curse stays steady in sixth, Can't Grow a Moustache climbs to ninth, On the Curbs drops to 13th, and Jaffa Cake Racing stays down in 33rd, though not really had a great season. At the bottom of the pile, Timo's podcast team drops to 61st, just ahead of EMT's Red Bull Rejects and Robert Percy's Kiwi Burn. As in plum last, still somehow on a positive point score despite losing 170 points each weekend for a number of inactive drivers.
What's your team? The
So
upcoming team.
I've got three that I run. I've got the Mixing Pot,
Three?
Jaffa Cake Racing, and Hopeful Heroes, and then obviously the podcast outfit. So we've all got three teams plus one through the podcast account.
So how are you doing?
Overall 17th, 33rd, and 48th.
Ah, how many have you got?
Three.
No, how many in your whole fantasy
How many
league?
teams in the whole league?
Yeah.
63.
Ah, okay.
And an alarming amount of Germans in it as well. So they're welcome to listen along and obviously play the game, but we don't know who many of them are. We know maybe three people that are taking part in this, and that's stretching it.
That's cool.
Yeah, so we're an international podcast with many listeners. But otherwise, that is all for this episode of the Undercut Podcast. We'll be back soon for a preview of the Las Vegas Grand Prix. In the meantime, though, Leah, where can you be found if people want more content from you?
Yeah, as usual, I'm at Motorsport Leah on pretty much every social media platform, is where you can find me digitally. For those who are also fans of two wheels as well as four, I'll be at MCL this coming Sunday. What day is it? 16th, I think. 16th for BSB Day, at MCL, and then a few other dates across the event. So if you're heading down to the NEC for MCL, you'll find me fangirling over probably a Yamaha R1 or something. But yeah, otherwise it'd be my social media platforms, and hopefully out and about soon.
Yeah, I won't be making a repeat weekend trip to the NEC. I've just completed 3 days there at the Classic Motor Show. And yeah, don't fancy spending any more days inside a big convention hall near Birmingham, especially because showing at the NEC, you get there early, you leave late. It's 3 days where you don't see the sun, and it gets to you. It's like some sort of inhuman experiment where you sort of wake up, leave your hotel, it's just about sort of dawn, and then you get to a big room and stay inside until the sun sets again, and you're like, I crave vitamin D and the warm touch of the sun.
Yeah, and artificial light, it's just like, oh, freaks me out a little bit, but yeah,
Yeah.
I'll be there.
3 days it does your nut in, plus everything's air conditioned, it's surprisingly dusty as well. And you sort of come away from it sort of wondering how you haven't come down with consumption or TB or something ridiculous. So I'm on the edge of having flu at the moment, just trying to sort of like drink enough water to stay on top of it and just hope. But otherwise, yeah, if you want more from me, you can of course read the Classic Car Weekly report from the Classic Motor Show this weekend at the NEC, which will be out on shop shelves on Wednesday. There's all sorts of digital content from the weekend that I put together. There was our preview video, there was our live podcast from it that are out on the Classic Car Weekly YouTube and Spotify accounts. And of course, if you want more from me personally, at Jesse on Cars on pretty much all the online platforms, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. So yeah, a lot to enjoy from that. Otherwise, that has been all from the Undercut podcast for this review of the Brazilian Grand Prix. We'll be back when we get to Las Vegas in about a week and a bit's time. I can't remember who we've got on for that, so it'll be a surprise for you and me both, listener.